A smile as red as blood. Once upon a time, a little girl named Gretel walked down a wide, lonely road all by herself. She was as sad as a little girl can be, for the person whom she loved most in all the world was gone. After a time, she came to a small village that stood in the shadow of another great wood. This wood was as big as the last one, but no two woods could have been more different. Where the wood of life had been bright, inviting, and alive, this one was dark, forbidding, and dead. So forbidding that almost no one went in, and exactly no one came out. It was called the Schwarzwald, the Wood of Darkness. But the little village that stood near the Schwarzwald was not dark at all. No, no. It was ringed by trees that, when Gretel arrived, had just slipped into their golden robes of autumn. Laughter was in the air, as was the smell of wood burning in fireplaces and apple cider frothing with cinnamon. Gretel walked down the town's single road, looking in the warm windows of the little houses, wishing that someone might invite her inside for some food, cider, and a little human comfort. But all the doors remained closed to Gretel. She was very tired and very, very lonely, and on the verge of giving up. She sat down and all her troubles overwhelmed her. She began to cry. Presently, the door to one of the houses opened, and a silver-haired woman came out. She went up to the little girl crying by the side of the road and asked her her name and why she was all alone. Gretel told her that she and her brother had long ago run away from home, but that recently her brother had been killed, and she didn't know where to go or what to do. The woman reached out to hold her, and Gretel fell into her arms and buried her face in the woman's neck. She took Gretel into her home and washed her, and picked the knots from her hair and gave her some old but clean clothes. Some weeks went by. Gretel had no thought now of where else she should go, or what else she should do, for what sense did it make to do anything now that Hansel was gone? And that is how Gretel came to live with the silver-haired widow in the little village. Soon Gretel was just another child there, and though she carried a great sorrow around with her, she put on a brave face. It was the time of the harvest, and everyone worked all day long, including Gretel. In the evenings, when the autumn air became cool, the villagers would gather in front of the town tavern and drink and laugh and converse while the children ran about in their games. But Gretel had no heart to play, so instead, she sat by the grown-ups and listened to their talk. There was one grown-up in particular whom Gretel liked listening to. He was a young man, cheerful and kind, and he was very handsome. He had long black hair and green eyes flecked with gold that seemed to dance in the light. And it seemed to Gretel that the young man liked her too, for whenever he saw her looking at him, he would smile with lips of deep red before she, blushing, could turn away. So she sat near him always and marveled at his easy jokes and his careless laughter and his wonderful eyes. Occasionally, he would leave the grown-ups in the tavern and go out among the children. He would tease them gently and lift them up, and all of them, particularly the girls, loved him. Sometimes a child would bring to the handsome young man a toy that was broken. It would be a porcelain doll with a finger that had cracked off, or a wooden king that had lost its head. The handsome young man would draw from his pocket a tattered piece of twine. He would hold the toy between his knees and tie the twine around the broken place. When he unwound the twine, the toy was as good as new. The children would cry aloud and clap their hands, and the handsome young man would smile. Then he would go back to the tavern with the grown-ups. Each day, as the sky turned from pale blue to rich purple to black, Gretel would watch the handsome young man say his farewells, slip out the tavern door, and disappear into the darkness. Out of the village, all alone, she wondered where he went. Well, one warm afternoon, when the last of the barley had been brought in from the fields, Gretel sat by the door of the tavern and watched the men play their favorite game. They played like this. One man balanced a mug on his chin, and everyone else tried to throw coins into it. If the mug didn't fall, the man got to keep all the coins. If it did, he had to buy everyone a drink. It was the young man's turn to have the mug on his chin, and Gretel watched as he weaved about like a snake being charmed, trying to prevent the mug from falling. Just then, one of the young man's friends appeared at Gretel's shoulder. "Give him a shout," the friend whispered. "See if he can hold it then." Gretel thought this was a funny idea, so she called the young man's name loudly. He was startled, for never before had Gretel spoken to him. He turned to her, and as he did, the mug went crashing to the ground. The men cheered, and the man who had put her up to it threw his head back and laughed till he was red from his collar to the top of his bald pate. But the young man's golden green eyes were wide, and suddenly he rushed at Gretel. His hands were stretched out before him like claws. Gretel screamed as he caught her hard around the waist. And then, in a moment, she was swooping through the air, her long blonde hair streaming out behind her, and his strong arms holding tightly onto her hips. And he was laughing, a beautiful, joyous laugh, his head thrown back and his eyes shining. He placed her on the ground again and smiled at her, and Gretel was breathless. He rubbed her head as if she were a puppy, and then he turned to lead the other men into the tavern. Gretel had been fascinated by the young man before, but in that moment, when he held her high in the air, and his golden green eyes were sparkling, and his red lips were curving, and he was laughing, laughing with her and her alone. Well, at that moment, Gretel had passed beyond fascination. In that moment, Gretel had fallen in love. Okay, it wasn't real love, you might say, just a child's infatuation. You might say that, but if you did, it would prove that you were already old and that you don't remember what it's like to be a child at all. Every day after that, Gretel made sure to be near the handsome young man with the green eyes and black hair and red lips. He would talk to her and make her laugh and steal apples from the harvest barrels for her. And she wondered why she should be so lucky as to get all of this attention from him. One day, soon before the great harvest feast, as the day's work in the orchards was coming to a close and all the ladders were being folded up and taken in, Gretel noticed a large, beautiful apple still hanging from the bough of a tree up above her head. She tried to jump for it, to grab it and put it in the barrels before a bird saw it and pecked holes in it, but it was too high for her to reach. So she called to the handsome young man, asking him to come over and pluck it. He came and smiled at her, but it was too high for him, too. So he took her by the hips and lifted her into the air, and she gasped, as she always gasped, when he touched her. And then she was high enough in the air to reach the apple, and she picked it. And then, instead of putting her down, he threw her into the air. Gretel screamed, but not in fear. And he caught her and threw her up again, and she was laughing. And he threw her up a third time, but this time he threw her too near an overhanging branch. And she reached up to protect her head, but too late, and she cried out in pain. When he lowered her to the ground, red blood was running in a narrow rivulet down her face. Her forehead had struck the branch and left a deep cut just above her eyebrow. She was having trouble seeing out of her left eye through the steady stream of blood. The young man knelt before her. He gazed at the cut, very gently, very slowly. He applied his lips to it, and he sucked the blood away. Gretel did not know what to think of that. Then he took from his pocket the piece of tattered twine that he used to fix the children's toys, and he wrapped it around her head so that it ran crosswise over the cut. He smiled at Gretel, and when he took the twine away and wiped the blood from Gretel's face, she saw that the bleeding had stopped and that her head no longer hurt at all. Now, dear reader, I seem to detect in you a growing unease about this handsome young man. I must say, I think that is very unfair of you. Do you suspect a flower just because it's beautiful? Or a doctor for his mysterious healing power? Or the postman, because you don't know where he sleeps at night? Very unfair indeed. Oh, and while I'm thinking about it, you should go ahead and rehire that babysitter that came by for the previous story. Make them take the little ones out to a movie this time. A G-rated movie. Or an R-rated movie, for that matter. Whatever it is, it probably won't be as bad as what you're about to hear. I know, you don't believe me. How much worse could things get, you ask? Believe me, much worse. As Gretel and the handsome young man walked in from the orchard that night, they talked about this and that, the weather, the apple crop, the upcoming harvest feast, until suddenly he turned to her and asked her if she didn't wonder where he lived. Gretel, shyly, replied that she did wonder sometimes. He asked if maybe she would like to see his house. Her heart fluttered, and she told him she would like to very much. And she thanked him for the kind invitation, and then she asked the handsome young man where his house was. "A little ways into the forest," he said. "In the forest?" He laughed. "You're not afraid of that silly old forest, are you?"
"No," she lied.
"I'll leave a path of ashes for you to follow. How's that?"
Gretel's heart floated up near her mouth. That's good," she said. But that night, when she returned home and told the widow that she was going into the Schwarzwald to visit the handsome young man, a great fight began. The widow forbade her from going. It was not right for a child to visit a man's house in the first place, she said. And the fact that it was in the Schwarzwald? Did Gretel know nothing of that place? Was she a fool? Gretel was furious. She raged and cried all that night. The next day, her face red and puffy, she told the handsome young man that she could not come, that the widow would not allow it. He smiled and told her not to worry, that they were still friends. But he talked to her less that day. She watched him from afar. Rarely did his gaze turn to meet hers. "He's forgetting me," she thought. At the end of the day, the handsome young man turned toward the tavern without even glancing at Gretel, as if she no longer existed. Just before he disappeared inside the tavern door, Gretel ran and caught him by the arm. "I'll come," she whispered fiercely, urgently. "I'll come tomorrow." The young man hesitated, and then he smiled and went into the tavern. Gretel returned home, more determined than ever. She told the widow that she was going on the morrow and that there was nothing she could do about it. They fought more that night, but Gretel was implacable. Early the next morning, she rose and prepared to go. But she found the widow, arms folded sternly across her chest, standing before the door. Gretel ran and pushed past her, squeezing under her armpit and then breaking into a run once she made it past the door frame. "Gretel!" the widow cried. "Gretel!" But Gretel ignored her and ran out of the yard and into the dirt road. Then, From the doorway, the widow cried, "Take these!" Gretel slowed and looked back. The widow held a bag of lentils in her hand. Cautiously, fearing a trick, Gretel walked back into the yard.
"Scatter them on the ashen path," the widow said mournfully, "in case it rains."
Gretel walked to the edge of the Schwarzwald and peered in. She felt a shiver skitter down her spine. At the wood's edge, the trees had the bright red and yellow leaves of high autumn, but Gretel could see that a little farther in, the branches were mostly bare. The path of ashes snaked deep into the wood and out of sight. For a moment, Gretel hesitated. The wood was an evil place. Everyone knew that. What if she just turned around, she wondered, and did not go? What then? He would think she was a coward. Or worse, he would think that she did not care. No, Gretel could not allow that. She breathed deep. Then she plunged into the darkness, scattering lentils as she went. As she walked, the air became colder, and within minutes the sunlight was almost entirely blocked by the trees. Gretel began to feel frightened. Branches hung like the claws of dead men. Clouds of gray mist passed by, looking for all the world like lost souls. The trees around her were gnarled and scarred, mutilated by time. No bird sang. The branches' long fingers became longer as Gretel walked, and soon it seemed that they were trying to grab her hair and her cheeks, scratching and tearing into her soft skin. She tripped on the twisted roots that reached up from the ground like corpses in a graveyard come back to life. Then it began to rain, as cold and sharp as needles falling from the sky. The rain struck the wood of the trees, making eerie sounds almost like words. Gretel stopped and listened. The words seemed to say,
"Go home, little girl, go home. To a murderer's house you've come."
For a moment, she stopped and considered following the rain's advice. But then she shook her head. "You're being foolish," Gretel told herself. "Rain can't talk." No, of course it can't. The moon can eat children, and fingers can open doors, and people's heads can be put back on. But rain? Talk? Don't be ridiculous. Good thinking, Gretel, dear. Good thinking. So, she went on through the darkness, ducking to avoid the clawing branches, and still she scattered the lentils behind her. Finally, she came to a clearing. In the center of it stood a tall, dilapidated house. It had once been painted black, but now the paint was peeling, revealing the rotting wood beneath, which was also black. The stone roof was high and steeply sloping, with a long row of unlit windows poking out from beneath the slate. Before the windows, from the eaves, hung cages. In almost every one, there perched a white bird, like a dove, but filthy, covered with brown stains and molting feathers. As Gretel stepped into the clearing, one called out in a voice that sounded more like a crow's than a dove's.
"Go home, little girl, go home. To a murderer's house you've come."
Then another repeated it, and another, their raspy voices ringing out together in a horrible chorus.
"Go home, little girl, go home. To a murderer's house you've come. Go home, little girl, go home. Go home, murderer's house you've come. Go home, murderer's house you've come. Go home, murderer's house you've come. Go home."
Psst! Gretel! Gretel! What are you doing? Turn around! Go home! Go home! You would go home, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be taken in by such a man as this. You would turn right around and leave. Tell me you would. Say you would. Oh, no, you wouldn't. Not with such an object of your fascination and adoration there waiting for you, and for you alone. Haven't you ever heard that enchanting friend? You know, the coolest boy, the older girl, and he or she seemed to like you? Of all people, you? Imagine that he or she is in that house, waiting for you, for no one but you. What would you do? What wouldn't you do? Gretel followed the path of ashes up to the stairs. The heavy ebony door stood slightly ajar. "Hello?" she called. No answer. Slowly, fearfully, she pushed the door back and entered the front hall. All was dark, save a faint glow from a stairway that descended to the cellar. She followed the dim light below ground, carefully placing one small foot after the other on the creaking stairs. She found herself in a filthy old kitchen. Dirty pots and pans lay in piles on the stone floor. Chairs were overturned. In the middle of the room was a plain oaken table with a large copper-colored stain. Gretel thought it looked like blood. Off in one corner, a great cauldron boiled, and crouched over it was an old woman with an iron shackle on her leg. Hello? Gretel said uncertainly. The woman turned. Her face was like worn leather. Her teeth were rotting in her gums. She glanced fearfully at the steps that led above.
"Who are you?"
the old woman hissed.
"What are you doing here?"
I'm here to see my friend, Gretel answered, her voice a tremble. The woman stared at her.
"Through the wood?" she asked. "By yourself?"
Gretel nodded.
"Oh, poor girl,"
the woman muttered as she came nearer.
"You are brave to come all this way, but you must flee."
Gretel's eyes grew wide, but she didn't move. "I want to see him," Gretel said. The old woman sighed and touched the girl's cheek, which was bleeding from the clawing branches.
"Oh, my dear, does your friend have long black hair, green eyes that dance with flecks of gold, and lips as red as blood?"
Gretel nodded.
"Then, my dear, you have befriended your death."
The old woman paused and then went on.
"He is my son, though. What kind of son would keep his mother locked up as a prisoner, I do not know. He is evil, an evil magician, a warlock. He invites girls to this house, and he..."
No little children around, right? Like I asked, are you sure? Check under the bed. At this point, they're usually hiding under the bed. No? Okay. As long as you're certain.
"He invites girls to this house, and he reaches down their throats and rips their souls from their bodies, and he traps the souls in cages in the form of doves to let them rot under his eaves. Then he hacks the girls' bodies to pieces to make our supper."
The old woman smiled sadly and reached out to touch a lock of Gretel's golden hair.
"Such a brave and pretty girl, but such a fool."
Suddenly, a crash rang out above. The woman's eyes went wide, and without another word, she pushed Gretel behind an enormous stack of dirty pots and scampered back to her cauldron. At that very moment, the handsome young man with green eyes and smile as red as blood appeared at the foot of the steps. He had a girl by the hair. Dear listeners, I'm sorry for what follows. He threw the girl on the oaken table and, from a nearby cupboard, produced a filthy iron cage. Then he reached his hand into the girl's mouth until his arm was buried deep in her throat. Slowly, painfully, and with great struggle from the girl, he pulled forth a beautiful white dove. The dove fought the young man as he shoved it in the filthy cage and slammed the door shut. The girl's body was still. Okay, now you might want to close your eyes. He lifted an axe that hung on the wall, and Gretel, peering through a gap between a filthy pot and a filthier pan, watched her handsome, wonderful, funny friend hack the girl's body into bits and toss each piece into the boiling cauldron. His blunt butcher's knife rose and fell. He licked the blood from his hands and sent piece after piece sailing into the pot. Each piece, that is, save one. On the girl's left hand, there was a lovely golden ring inlaid with rubies, red as rubies can be. He tried to remove the ring so that it would not ruin the stew, but it wouldn't come off. Finally, in a rage, he hacked the finger clean off her hand and hurled it across the room. Gretel watched, dumbstruck, as it tumbled through the air, over the enormous pile of pots and pans that she was hiding behind, and landed squarely in her lap, ring and all. Somehow, she did not scream. The young man picked up the cage and started for the stairs.
"I'll be back in a moment, Mother," he said. "See that my stew is ready."
As soon as he'd gone, the old woman ducked behind the pile of pots and pans.
"Go, my dear," she hissed at Gretel. "Run away and never come back."
The little girl needed no further encouragement. She fled up the stairs and out the door, but she came to a stop on the steps of the house. The rain was falling, fat and wet and hard now, and the ashen path was utterly washed away. Even the lentils would be buried in the muck that was made by this heavy rain. Gretel had no way to get home. But then she noticed something incredible. The lentils had sprouted. In the little time she'd been in the house, green shoots had come up from the wet soil, and now a pale green path marked her way back through the wood. She followed it as fast as her feet would carry her. When Gretel arrived at the widow's house, she went straight to her room and locked herself in. The widow came to the door, leaned her head against the door frame, and asked Gretel if she was all right. Gretel didn't answer. She had her face buried deep in her pillow. As if it were still right before her eyes, she could see the young man's bright blade slicing through the air toward the innocent girl on the table. And yet, it wasn't the young man's blade at all. It was the blade of her father's sword. And the innocent girl was Gretel, her white neck exposed to the cold, flashing steel. She saw the young man's face and her father's face as if they were one. "Are there no good grown-ups anywhere?" she cried. She wished she had her brother beside her, but he was gone, dead. "And it's my fault," she thought, and suddenly she realized that she had thought this all along. "It's my fault. We shouldn't have run away from home. We shouldn't have eaten the walls of that house, and I shouldn't have let Hansel go into the woods alone, not once, not twice, and certainly not three times." Her whole body throbbed. "All the grown-ups want to kill me. I don't blame them. What is wrong with me?" Her little body shook. "Why am I so bad?"
"Oh, don't be stupid," said a voice.
Gretel looked up with a start. She was alone in the room, so who had said that? She looked under the door. The widow had gone away. She turned and faced the window. There, sitting on the window frame, was a black raven. She gazed at it curiously. He tapped his black beak against the glass, and then he said,
"Do you mind if we come in?"
Gretel wiped her face and advanced to the window. "We?"
"Yes, my brothers and I."
Gretel opened the window, and in fluttered three ravens, as black as could be.
"You shouldn't tell her she's stupid," said the second raven to the first. "It isn't polite." "Even if it is true," said the third.
The first raven cleared his throat.
"We happened to be flying by, dear girl, when we noticed that you were upset. We felt bad."
"Personally responsible," added the second.
"Accidentally complicit," said the third.
Gretel, who had had a very long day already, plopped down on her bed and stared.
"You see," the first raven continued, "all the misfortune that you and your poor brother have experienced is really the result of a, well, I guess you'd say an indiscreet conversation that the three of us had."
He cocked his head apologetically. Gretel continued to stare.
"Indiscreet,"
the second whispered.
"What about it?"
the first replied. The third rolled his eyes.
"Indiscreet, dear girl, means we shouldn't have been talking about what we were talking about where we were talking about it." "Oh, that was helpful," said the second.
And then,
"Why don't we just explain it to her?"
And so, once the three ravens had settled their feathers and found comfortable perches on the windowsill, they told Gretel the whole story from the very beginning. They told her about her grandfather's dying wish, and how her father had found the portrait anyway, and then how he had stolen her mother.
"He did what?"
Gretel interrupted.
"Moving right along," said the second raven.
Then they told her about their indiscreet conversation, and how her father's servant, faithful Johannes, had heard it and used it to save her parents' lives.
"You see," the first raven continued, "any wedding between your parents was destined to be cursed." "The three of us know all about destiny," interrupted the second raven. "It's sort of what we do," said the third. "They were destined to be cursed," the first began, "though what they did to you children, that goes a little beyond the scope of the curse, I'd say," finished the second.
The third raven added quickly,
"But it certainly isn't your fault." "It's probably ours," said the first magnanimously. "Had we kept our black beak shut, none of this would have happened."
Gretel scrunched up her face. "Because my parents would have died before Hansel and I were even born?"
"Exactly."
"That doesn't seem much better," Gretel pointed out.
"Hmm," said the first. "I guess that's right."
"No," Gretel said. "It's my fault. If Hansel and I hadn't run away from home, he wouldn't be dead. And we never would have killed the baker woman, and the father never would have wished his sons into swallows," and the third raven interrupted her.
"Do you remember why you ran away, Gretel?"
She looked into his black eyes and nodded. He said,
"Seems like a pretty good reason to me."
Gretel stared past the three ravens and out the window at the red and orange leaves that balanced on the ends of branches like tears. After a while, the third raven said,
"Well, we really should be going. More flying around to be done, letting people's fates out of the bag." "Anything else we can answer for you before we go?" said the second raven.
"It really isn't my fault," Gretel said.
"We are unable to lie," the first raven replied. "So it must not be."
And with that, the three ravens beat their black wings against the air and flew out the open window. Gretel fell back on her bed. It wasn't her fault. She had the sudden impulse to take all of the sadness that had been crushing her and hurl it away, to hurl it at those who had caused it in the first place, to make them feel the pain and know it and understand her. Slowly, she reached into her pocket and let her hand close around something that was small and cool and turning blue. The next day, the village was all merriment. Tables were set all about with bread and beer and cider, as well as harvest gourds and autumn leaves and other signs of the festive season. Neighbors spoke cheerily about the cool, clear weather, and little clouds of steam puffed from their mouths. Smoke rose from chimneys, and the smell of roasting sausage, topped with apples, wafted over the gathering. The handsome young man stood with the other men, drinking beer from a great mug and laughing about this and that. Children ran to and fro. Soon the sausages were ready, and heaping platters were brought to the tables. Gretel quietly emerged from the old woman's house, her hands buried deep in the pocket of her dress. Everyone went to their seats at the tables, and the master of the town stood and delivered a few fine words. A couple of the older men did as well. Then the handsome young man stood up, raised his glass to the women, and said they were as beautiful as any women in all the world. All the men cheered heartily, and the women blushed and smiled. And then, to everyone's surprise, Gretel stood up. "Can I say something?" she said timidly. Even standing, she was smaller than most of the sitting adults.
"Aw, get up on the chair, honey,"
one of the villagers told her. So she stood on her chair.
I want to tell you," she began.
But then she stopped. She looked at the handsome young man. He was smiling at her. But then she glanced down at his hands, hands that could tear a girl's soul from its body.
"A dream," Gretel said. "Just a dream that I had."
The villagers murmured with approval. Once upon a time, you see, dreams were thought to possess hidden truth.
"I dreamed that I went into the Schwarzwald," she said. "But as I went walking through it, and the rain hit my face and the roots tripped my feet, I heard the trees whisper, 'Go home, little girl, go home. To a murderer's house you've come.'"
The villagers started with dismay, and the young man was staring at Gretel with a very strange expression on his face. Gretel glanced at his powerful, magical hands and said hastily,
"It was only a dream. I came to a house in a clearing, and white birds hung in cages from the eaves, and they chanted all together, 'Go home, little girl, go home. To a murderer's house you've come.' But I went inside and followed a light into the cellar, where I found an old woman wearing a chain of iron. She told me to flee, and that the man who lived there was her son, and a warlock, and a murderer."
The young man suddenly leaped to his feet. All the villagers stared at him. Sheepishly, he sat back down.
"It was just a dream," Gretel said cautiously. "Just a dream."
"Then the man came home, and," she added quietly, "he looked just like you." And Gretel pointed to the handsome young man, who was staring intently at her and had begun chewing on his fingernails like a madman.
"He had a girl, and he was dragging her by the hair. He threw her onto a table and pulled a pure white dove from her mouth and put it in a cage. It was only a dream. And then he took an axe and he chopped the girl to bits. It was only a dream. And he licked the blood off his fingers and threw the bits of the girl into a boiling cauldron. It was only a dream."
The villagers were now talking to one another excitedly, pointing first at her and then at the young man.
"Except one piece didn't go into the cauldron," she went on. "The girl's finger had a golden ring with rubies red as rubies can be. He threw the finger in a rage, and it tumbled through the air and fell right in my lap."
She paused. The villagers were now silent, waiting for the conclusion of Gretel's tale. The handsome young man's shoulders were rising and falling, and his eyes were wild. Gretel, standing on the chair, put her hand into her pocket and drew it out again.
"And here it is," she said.
She held the blooming finger, with the ring still on it, in her hand. The young man leaped from his chair and began to chant the words of a dark curse. But before he could finish, someone came up behind him and knocked him unconscious with a tray of sausages. Then the oil was prepared, and a villager was sent to find the poisonous snakes. Because, of course, the best way to kill a warlock is to cook him with poisonous snakes in a cauldron of boiling oil.
obviously. But before the handsome young man could be thrown into the cauldron, Gretel went up to his unconscious body and slipped her slender hand into one of his pockets. She withdrew the tattered, blood-stained piece of twine. She put it into her own pocket and then nodded to the men of the village, who hoisted up his limp body and threw it into the hissing vat of oil and snakes. As the evil young man's life came to an end, somewhere deep in the forest, a magic shackle was broken, and an old woman was set free. And around the eaves of a dark house, 100 doves burst forth from their cages and fell to the ground, young women again. Gretel returned to the feasting table with all the other villagers. They comforted her and marveled at her courage. At the end of the meal, she approached the widow and, after apologizing for being so willful and disobedient, told her that she would soon be leaving.
"Where do you plan to go?"
the widow asked. Gretel thought about it. At last, she said, "On." Okay, there. That one didn't end quite so badly. Yes, it was pretty gory in the middle, but Gretel didn't lose any body parts and nobody died, at least nobody we really liked. In fact, things start getting better right here. So if you're still feeling sad about Hansel or anything else, don't stop now. In fact, if you're still feeling sad, now's the time to keep going. On the other hand, if you're feeling sick to your stomach because of all the blood, now's a great time to stop. And we'll leave it there for tonight. Snuggle up, close your eyes, put on some soothing music or soothing audio, and just remember, this is all make-believe. Good night and sweet dreams.